Hey, future doctors. Welcome back to Spoonful of Sugar. We have an amazing episode in store for you today on a much-needed topic. Let's let the host introduce themselves and take it away.
Hey, future doctors. Thanks for tuning in to Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Akiva Aleph. I attend Ohio University in Cleveland, and I will be your host today. Stats are often a tough subject for medical students, but hopefully this review will guide you to the right start for your practice questions and tests so you can excel on boards. And remember, this is a dense topic, and it will therefore be split into three episodes with lots of technical terms. Hopefully, I have broken it down to more bite-sized pieces, but I definitely recommend you do this one bit by bit and supplement with some practice questions to make sure it does not become overwhelming. All right, let's jump right in with some basic concepts, starting with definitions and moving on to equations. Does anybody know what precision is? Precision, which is also known as reliability, is the consistent reproducibility of a test. Increased precision will lead to reduced error, which is also known as more statistical power. How about accuracy? Accuracy, which is also known as validity, shows how close to reality the test results actually are. So for this, I want you to think of like a dartboard. Accuracy is hitting the bullseye, and precision is having a close grouping every time, but not necessarily on the bullseye or your true target. Now we'll talk about two very common terms, prevalence and incidence. Does anybody know what the difference between them is? So prevalence is how common the disease appears. This is essentially the number of cases per total population. And incidence, on the other hand, which is also known as absolute risk, shows how many new incidents of disease pop up. What does that mean? That the number of new cases per total population at risk. For example, only people at risk for getting disease are considered in the population. So a chronic disease will have a high or low prevalence. It'll have a high prevalence. Since people will live with it for a long time versus the common cold, the prevalence will tend to equal the incidence as new people are infected and old cases heal. So another way to kind of analyze this is to consider if a new variable will increase infectivity, mortality, or survival rates. If infectivity increases, then incidence will also increase because you're having more new cases. If mortality increases, then prevalence will decrease because as people die from the disease, there are less people in the current population with the disease. And if survival rates increase, prevalence will increase because the longer people are able to survive with the disease, then as more people get the disease and are living longer, you'll have a higher proportion of sick people in the population. So now we can talk about contingency tables, and you'll see this everywhere. These are those kind of 2x2 boxes that's really utilized as the basic organizational table in medical statistics. So you want to organize this ideally with columns being disease present versus absent. So column one is disease here, column two is disease not here. And rows being the, so to speak, item tested, whether this is a new diagnostic test, such as a strep or flu test, or an evaluation of exposures when studying disease in a population. For example, do they smoke, do they not smoke? So the best thing to do here is consider each box on the table as a letter, with the top left box being A, top right being B, bottom left is C, bottom right is D. This is the first trick that board testers will really kind of get at you on an exam. Always make sure your margins are in order and you are viewing the data correctly. This will be especially important in a minute when we discuss the equations needed to solve the questions utilizing this table. So the first kind of measure that we're going to use in regards to the contingency table is true positive. What is true positive? True positive is box A, since this is the disease present column and the diagnostic test positive that confirmed it. So in other words, you have disease truly present and the diagnostic test said, yes, disease is here. That's a true positive. How about a true negative? Well, this is going to be, so to speak, the opposite of that. This is box D, which is the bottom right, since the disease is denoted negative on the disease here or disease absent column, and the disease is correctly identified as negative in the row. We're going to move on now to false positive and false negative. False positive will be therefore box B. It's negative for disease, but the test incorrectly labeled the patient as positive. And false negative is box C, since the disease is actually present, but unfortunately the test failed and said the patient was negative. So understanding those terms, how can we kind of get a feeling for how appropriate or how good, how effective a diagnostic test will be? Well, we'll look at the sensitivity and the specificity. These can sometimes confuse medical students, so I'll try to break this down with some examples. What is sensitivity? Sensitivity is essentially the rate of true positives. So this is the true positives divided by all of the disease cases. So in other words, we could kind of break this down. So hopefully this will help you on your exams. All you need to know for this one is sensitivity equals box A divided by boxes A plus C, or box A divided by the column one total, right? So column one again is everyone who has the disease, truly has the disease. So you're going to divide box A by everyone that's diseased. So now that we understand it, the applied concept is a test with a high sensitivity means it's really, really good at getting true positive results. This means it can rule out disease. Since it has a very low threshold to be positive, the number of cases will be higher. It's very sensitive. It's going to pick up everything. So if it comes back and says, yeah, this patient's positive, it might not be so certain that this patient truly is positive because we're being really cautious. We want, if there's a chance this patient has the disease, we want it to come back positive. That's what 99% sensitivity means. But what happens if the test comes back negative? Well, if the test comes back negative, that means it is so extremely likely that the patient is truly negative. In other words, without disease. So we use sensitivity to rule out disease. So what's specificity? So specificity is going to be the corollary of sensitivity. This is used to rule in disease since it very specifically shows a negative result. In other words, when a test has a very high specificity, again, let's look at that 99% specificity rate, it means that the true negatives are really high. We're really good at saying this patient has, you know, we're really strongly saying this patient has no disease. So the equation for that is box D over the total of box B plus D, or box D divided by the sum of column two. So think of specificity and sensitivity as rate of columns. So again, the specificity is going to rule in disease because we're being overly general with negative results. And therefore, if you have a positive result, it means you really have it. So now we can move on to two other measures used in contingency tables, which is the positive predictive value and the negative predictive value. The positive predictive value is the ability, this is the probability or chance that a person who has a positive test result, row one, truly has the disease in question. So this is a measurement of how successful the proposed diagnostic test is. So remember, the rows are a proposed diagnostic test, and the columns are, in reality, the number of people with or without the disease. The equation for this one is therefore going to be box A divided by the total of box A plus B, or box A divided by the sum of row one. So again, before we just said that sensitivity and specificity you want to think of as the rate of the columns. Positive predictive value, negative predictive value are kind of like the rate of the, or the proportion of the rows. So negative predictive value, what do we think that is? Yeah, so negative predictive value is therefore going to be kind of like the specificity of how this test is, how this diagnostic test is. How good is it at predicting that a negative test result truly means the person is disease-free? And the equation for this one is going to be box D over the total of row two, or in other words, box D divided by the total of boxes C plus D. So this kind of wraps up the preface of stats and contingency tables. I think contingency tables are very likely one of the highest yield stats kind of perspectives you'll see on board exams and in class exams as well. It really is kind of the basis here. And if it gets a little too overwhelming or complicated, just try and remember the boxes and try to remember what we're trying to say here. Whether it's sensitivity and specificity as the rate of the columns, or positive predictive value and negative predictive value as the rate of the rows. So now we can move on to a little more complex equations. And these equations are going to go hand in hand with different types of statistical tests, which we're going to talk about most likely in episode 2. So the first one here is odds ratio. So what is an odds ratio? An odds ratio is specifically used in case control studies. And again, we'll talk about that in the next episode. Here, we're just going to focus on definition and the equations. So odds ratio is the measure of how much more likely a, so to speak, case, or typically a patient with disease, has had exposure to the risk factor in question. For example, you could use this to show that patients diagnosed with lung cancer, so we know they have lung cancer, have higher odds of being smokers, whether in the past, than non-smokers. So you would use this by collecting data for your contingency table, then using a bunch of algebra that really isn't necessary to understand, and therefore low yield for the exam, you end up with, and this is the high yield part of the equation, which is boxes. And again, we're going to stick with the boxes because you don't necessarily have to understand the math behind it. You could just plug and play when it comes to the actual exam, is boxes A times box D, all of that divided by box B times box C. So this equation and the knowledge of what we're kind of talking about with an odds ratio, and that'll have to do with the case control studies that we'll wrap around to later, is that people with lung cancer are X amount of times more likely to be chronic smokers. That's what you need to know. That value that it spits out, the number you get from an odds ratio, is the people we know have disease are this much more likely, this many times more likely than someone without disease to have been exposed to this risk factor. So the next one we'll talk about is relative risk. Does anybody know another name for relative risk? Another name for that is risk ratio. And again, this has to do with a very specific stats study, which is the cohort study. So relative risk is the risk inherent to certain practices relative to those who do not partake. So this is similar to an odds ratio, but with a very distinct difference. So here you would say, we're going to look at smokers. So we're going to look at a specific risk factor. We're not going to look at a specific disease yet. We're going to look at the risk factor. And we're going to say, smokers have been shown to have, and these numbers are made up, but smokers have been shown to have 10 times greater risk of developing lung cancer than non-smokers. So you're viewing this from the perspective of, we know the risk. We know that, you know, they've been exposed to smoking. Now, whatever ended up happening to them anyway. So this is in regards to developing disease versus the odds ratio, which was, right, where we knew the disease was present and then we determined prior exposures after determining presence of disease. So the equation needed here for relative risk, and this is what you kind of have to just memorize for boards, is relative risk equals parentheses box A divided by A plus B and parentheses all that divided by box C divided by C plus D. And the algebra here kind of makes a lot of sense if you do go back at that contingency table and try to understand what we're getting at, and therefore, you know, what's kind of like what's what. In other words, the ratio of positive disease with exposure, so that box A, over positive disease without exposure, or box C. So if someone smoked, because that's what we're looking at with the relative risk, we're looking at risk factors, we want to see, did they end up getting cancer or not? The next one we're going to talk about is attributable risk. Does anyone know what attributable risk is? This is the risk of developing disease from an exposure versus the risk of disease in non-exposure cases. So this equation is going to be A over A plus B minus C over C plus D. Essentially, the same equation as relative risk, but it uses subtraction to show the difference versus creating a ratio which shows the relative risk. So this is attributable versus relative. The next equation to talk about is the relative risk reduction. So the relative risk reduction kind of sounds like a ratio of reduced risk. So this is a measure of how much you can decrease the relative risk by introducing an intervention. And the equation here is therefore going to be related to relative risk. So it's relative risk reduction equals 1 minus relative risk. So it's simply 1 minus relative risk. In other words, if we can prevent the disease from happening, it is the remainder of the values from 1. And understanding that one's much less important than just knowing it's 1 minus relative risk for your exams. The next one is absolute risk reduction. And this one is the definitive measure difference for an intervention as opposed to a ratio. Kind of similar to what we did before, right? Absolute versus relative. There's that term again. What did we say relative was? Relative is a ratio. What did we say absolute was? Absolute is a difference. You subtract. So you do not divide, but rather you're going to subtract the difference of disease in treated versus untreated individuals. So if you wanted to know what the difference in risk is for developing a disease between a placebo group and a treatment group, you would calculate the incidence of disease between each and subtract. So the equation here is going to be absolute risk reduction equals C over C plus D minus A over A plus B. So this tells you that the risk of positive disease without exposure over the total of row two minus risk of a positive disease with exposure over row one is the exact amount of risk reduced with the treatment, or in other words, lack of exposure. So again, that second row there doesn't have to be treatment or exposure. It could be either way. So the first row and the second row is what you're introducing. That's the variable that you're introducing to the study in order to kind of see what's going on. The columns are always going to be disease present, disease absent. But the rows can be a diagnostic test. It could be an exposure. It could be a treatment. And that's, I think, the best way of looking at it. So the next equation we're going to talk about actually goes hand in hand with the one after it. So the first one we're going to talk about is number needed to treat. And the next one's going to be number needed to harm. So what does number needed to treat sound like to you? To me, it sounds exactly how it is. As implied, this is the number of patients who need to receive the treatment for at least one patient to benefit. The equation here is number needed to treat equals 1 over absolute risk reduction, that equation we just introduced in the last one. So a lot of these equations go hand in hand, and that's something I think is really worth picking up on. If you can remember absolute risk reduction, you know the equation for number needed to treat because it's just 1 over that. If you can remember the equation for relative risk, you know the relative risk reduction because it's just 1 minus that. All right, so back to number needed to treat. So number needed to treat is 1 over the absolute risk reduction. So this takes the absolute risk reduction value, which we now know means the treatment's efficacy at reducing harm or disease, and tells you literally how many patients do I need to treat for at least one to have benefit. So logically, you're going to want that number needed to treat to be really high or really low. You're going to want it to be really low, because if you need to treat 100 people for only one to benefit, then 99 people or 99% of people in this trial are gaining nothing from this. And only one person is actually being treated for the disease. So it's really not effective. But if your number needed to treat is one, then it's the greatest drug ever made and everyone who takes it benefits. So then if we're going to talk about number needed to harm, what does that sound like? Well, it's the inverse of what we just talked about. This is the number of patients needed to be exposed to a risk factor for one person to be harmed. So is the higher the number safer or more dangerous? So in this case, it's the opposite. You want that number to be super high. The higher the number of people of the higher the number needed to harm, the safer the exposure. So if the number needed to harm is 10, then every 10 people exposed, one person is harmed. And if the number needed to harm is 100, then only one out of every 100 would be harmed by the exposure, and it would be much safer than the previous example of 10. And the equation here is number needed to harm equals 1 over absolute risk or attributable risk. Okay. The last one we're going to talk about here is the hazard ratio. So what does a hazard ratio sound like? And luckily, I actually do think stats is one of the places in medicine where the names are a little more literal than you might see elsewhere. A hazard ratio is simply, it's a term used to assign hazard risked during a clinical trial. It's defined as hazard in the treatment group divided by hazard in the control group. It expresses the chance of hazard from the drug being tested. One is no hazard, greater than one is there's actually more hazard from the treatment, and less than one is more hazard from the control. In other words, the treatment is truly beneficial. So this is the end of part one, or the more complex terms and equations and definitions. The next episode is going to address what we use this data for, and I'll give you two quick questions before a little bit of advice. So if you want a diagnostic test to rule out disease, what measure do you want to be really high? Yeah, the answer here is sensitivity. Next question is, what measure shows the increased chances of developing a disease knowing that they were exposed to a risk factor? And the answer here is going to be relative risk, since we know they have exposure before doing the study, because that's the survey. Were you a smoker? Yes? All right, now we're going to look into whether or not you have lung cancer. So my advice here is that this episode was a little complex as far as the equations, and I know the boxes all have letters, and you have to know which letters get divided by which letters, and somehow that gives you all the answers you need for stats on boards. And what I did and what I think was really beneficial during my board prep for step one and level one was I found a stats cheat sheet online that had the contingency table labeled as well as all the equations underneath. And what I would do is during the intro on all of my practice tests is I would try to write that down by memory. And on the first few practice tests, I definitely was not able to. And I would kind of, you know, look over on the side, get it, write it down, reinforce that habit of like forced recall. And then once it came time to do the actual board exams, as soon as I sat down and I had my marker and my whiteboard, I immediately had an image of these equations and the contingency table. And I was able to write them down and just plug and play every one of these questions that came up very quickly. These kind of turn into gimme points that way. And I highly recommend you at least consider this, especially if you're struggling. And I know this is a podcast and maybe not the best format for visualizing the equations I've given. So definitely look up YouTube episodes or try to look it up in First Aid or other resources that have done really good jobs of writing this out. Thank you for listening. And tune in for episode 2 coming soon. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org and post them under the link for this episode. Good luck with studying, and remember that if you ever have an SOS moment while studying, Spoonful of Sugar is always here to help the medicine go down.